welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 49. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Hey, I'm gonna yawn first.
Jeez, okay. Yeah, he just rolled out of bed.
How's it going, Sean?
Good, man. We are wrapping up our Blaxploitation episodes. We were going to try to do four, and I think we're good. I think after today's episode, we'll be good.
Well, we had something planned, and it fucking fell through.
I was trying to say it more eloquently.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, as a producer on the show, you run into many, many problems, and, you know, I mean, honestly, we love the Blaxploitation thing, but hindsight, maybe four episodes might be a little too much, especially without the guest that I had planned, which actually the guest is still down. It's just not at this time.
Right,
so
right.
You'll be happy if that actually ever pans out.
So I'm sure it will.
Moving along.
Hold on. I need to pour myself a glass of Crown Royal Maple. Crown Royal Maple.
Coffee Shop of Horrors, everybody. Again.
Today's show brought to you by alcohol.
I'm drinking Canada Dry.
All right. Well,
diet.
We don't want another burning episode, so we'll.
Yeah, apparently.
We'll take it easy.
Ryan Turk doesn't want one either. Gotta listen to fucking Horror Authority over here.
Yeah, exactly. Hilarious. Well, first, before we jump into, we're going to be talking about horror blaxploitation. So I'm pretty
can't talk
today.
So you're drunk?
Not yet. We'll be talking about horror blaxploitation. But first, I think we need to jump into some Blu-ray announcements.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Do we?
Do you have any?
Do you have?
Yep.
Okay. on the 16th, Comedy of Terrors and Eskimo Nell were released in the UK. Arrow did Comedy of Terrors, 88 Films did Eskimo Nell. And February 17th, Scream released Animal, which actually that's a contemporary release produced by Drew Barrymore, oddly enough. Yeah, it's actually produced by Drew Barrymore. And I told you that, but you don't listen to me. surprisingly, like, decent. Great special effects on the monster, all practical pretty much.
Okay.
You know, it's very standard, you know, people go out in the woods, they're attacked by a creature. Very standard, nothing with that. The character development's not that great. There's a couple cool moments, but other than that, it's a fun little monster flick. If you're into that shit.
Is it better than Leprechaun Origins?
I actually never made it through that movie, so I don't know.
Allegedly,
it's
better.
Not that I turned it off, but I only got to like Leprechaun, and I bought that box set, and I was like, man, I'm gonna watch the Leprechaun movies. And I watched Leprechaun, and I'm like, I can't do it.
You didn't even get to Leprechaun in space?
No, I didn't get to Leprechaun 2.
Dude, you're no fun. Leprechaun in the Hood?
And, you know, Brian Trenchard-Smith directed two of those, I think, and he's, like, one of my favorites, you know? So eventually I'll get there when I'm, like, old and decrepit and have nothing to do. Also, From a Whisper to a Scream came out. Is that right?
Nope, it got delayed.
It got delayed?
Got delayed, yes, sir.
Really updated this list. so scratch that. That got delayed. VHS Viral, I know, is released. I've talked about that a few times. It's I rewatched it. It's not as bad as I saw it when I saw it at Fantastic Fest in the theater. It's not as bad. It's definitely worth the Bone Storm segment. But it was weird because there's been all this talk because when I originally saw it, there were three shorts. There was the Nacho Vigalondo, one of the magician one, and Bone Storm. Mm-hmm. And then there's this weird fucking wraparound bullshit that happens. And I thought it was really, really short. And I thought there was talk about a fourth segment that Todd Lincoln, the guy that did The Apparition, I thought he had he had a segment. And I was like, that's, you know, bizarre. Maybe I was wrong. But then later on I heard, and there was all this controversy that it was deleted. They didn't want it in there, blah, blah, blah. Well, eventually Bloody and Disgusting, Brad Miska, who produces the whole entire franchise, he said, you know, it's going to be on VOD and it's going to be back. Motherfucker, it's at the end after the credits.
Oh, God.
And two things. Number one, if anybody watched the fucking VHS movies, there's this, like, want to make you have epilepsy credits that roll because they play fucking dubstep, nothing but static, and fucking just bright lights and noises. So you can't even fathom to begin to watch the credits. And it's after the credits, so most people are going to turn it off. Second, I understand why it wasn't put in, because it's actually really good. And it's not, and it doesn't follow the formula of found footage. He uses very, very little found footage, but it's a really fucking beautiful and dark and short. It's fucking great. It's really, really good. And it's actually worth it, because now there's two segments in there. Usually, that's why I always say there's always two segments in the VHS films that are decent. And this one actually is called Gorgeous Vortex, and it's fucking legitimately, like, I say almost breathtaking. Yeah. It's fucking gorgeous, and it's really dark and mysterious, and it's fucking sexy as shit too. Nothing but titties.
Bam.
So yeah, and then Phantom of the Opera, Robert Englund's Phantom of the Opera is released by Scream, and I guess the Andromeda Strain. I haven't seen it on the shelf or anywhere, but apparently the 1971 version got released by Universal, which they're always like low key on their Blu-ray releases now, because they're re-releasing shit, but they don't ever like say it. Like, took me forever to find Firestarter. I thought that would be in the fucking store.
I know, man. I still haven't got Firestarter, just because I should just order that on Amazon.
Well, I finally got it, because there's this place I was telling you about it, and I tweeted, but in just a few states, GameStop has another store called MovieStop. And I went into this place, and they literally, like, no exaggeration, Sean is my witness, because I sent him a picture of the fucking store. There's like 20 fucking thousand movies in this place. Just lines of fucking DVDs and Blu-rays. Those shelves are stacked. They're not like, they're not face up like rental stores. You can only see the spines. So it's just flooded with used and new DVDs and Blu-rays. And I picked up some really like out of print stuff that was super cheap, like for $1.99, because no one ever goes in these stores around here to buy it. So, yeah, it's like in a few states. I know, like, Virginia was one. Of course, Florida has like 12 of them. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, if you're go to MovieStop.com and look up locations, because if you're, you know, a collector and you're looking for some out of print stuff, Blu-rays are a little bit minimal on what they have. But some of the older stuff, like older out of print DVDs, that's where to go, man. Like, I hit it big, and I only hit one. So yeah, FYE and MovieStop, if they're in your area, trust me. I know people, FYE's always had kind of a bad rap because of their prices, but they've completely like rechanged their formula and how they stock and price things, because it's super cheap now. So yeah, definitely something to look out for.
Nice.
But yeah, that's it.
And all right.
We'll hit next.
We got some good stuff coming up next week.
Yeah, next week's good. Just to let everyone know, I know we've mentioned, I said it a few times, Satan's Blade keeps on getting pushed back.
Yeah.
But apparently Olive Films has confirmed, like, April 24th. So
okay.
Satan's Blade will be getting a Blu-ray. I know it's supposed to come out, like, next week or something, and then it got pushed to, like, sometime in March, and now it's April. But they officially sent a press release, and I did request it, so I know I'm getting that shit.
Nice. Well, also in April, From a Whisper to a Scream got pushed all the way back to April 28th. And I think it was to add, they had to get another, for another
special feature. It was like commentary, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth it.
Cool.
So.
Yeah, and like I said, people would probably wonder why it's so short. We've said in the past, because I was actually asked a couple times on Twitter and Facebook, why aren't we like giving all new updates? We're just doing like kind of week by week now, because this shit would take forever.
Yeah,
it really would, because we're trying to cover more, and it would take too long.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
Cool. Right on. Unless they have some super crazy announcement, like holy shit, this movie's coming to Blu-ray this year. You know what I mean?
Blaxploitation horror.
Let's jump into, yeah. All right. So We have been talking about blaxploitation the past two episodes, and I feel like we've been kind of setting the foundation of it pretty good. For you know, as best as two totally white and dorky guys.
Why are you saying white and dorky? Like, are you like
white,
don't
nerdy?
I'm
gonna play some Weird Al. I'm gonna play some Weird Al for you.
Why? This is exactly why you're considering yourself that.
Hmm.
Because you made those jokes. No, I am far more. Don't lump me in the nerdy white boy category. I'm like overly confident in blaxploitation. I know my shit.
I know. And there is no way I would ever attempt to cover blaxploitation on my own, ever. So,
I would.
Brad would. So that's why this has worked. But what I'm saying is, I feel like we've been helping lay the foundation, you know. Starting with the beginnings of blaxploitation with Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, moving into more of the influences that blaxploitation has had on modern filmmakers. Any chance to talk about Quentin Tarantino and even get some audio from him into the show, I'm jumping on that shit for sure.
I wonder if people thought that was like our guest for a second.
Yeah.
I thought about that when I like listened to it. I was like, We got Tarantino's, I guess.
I found that stuff on YouTube. So moving along, like
giving it away.
I posted the YouTube clip on the website. So anyway, so I think that this
people
is
people never go to the website.
They don't. This is good to jump into the horror element of blaxploitation, especially because Scream Factory has the double feature of Blackula and Scream. Coming out on Blu-ray. So, unfortunately, we didn't get any screeners for that. But we'll do our best to cover what they're doing with it.
Did you watch them?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I watched the movies. You can...
Oh, I thought you meant, like, I literally thought you meant, since we haven't watched it, we're going to still try to cover it.
Right,
like,
I haven't watched
really
these at all, so...
I've seen Blackula a few times. I actually haven't revisited Scream Blackula Scream in a while because that thing's a little boring.
It is.
I'm more into the kind of, because Blackula is so popular, you know, because number one, when people hear Blackula, it's just, it's funny.
Yeah.
Because it obviously sounds like Dracula. You exactly know what you're going to get. So even as a kid, before I even knew what blaxploitation was, and even before I was getting into horror, I heard people joke about Blackula. So I don't know. I mean, it's a decent movie. It's funny at times. It's, you know, it's just whatever. It's one of the foundations for before they went into kind of you know, the spinoffs,
yeah.
And you know, just kind of their own thing, doing their own little their own horror films. Because I mean, the following year we got Blackenstein, which is obvious. I don't really need to go into that.
Allegedly, it's horrible.
Blackenstein is not bad. It's better than Scream Blackula Scream.
Huh? Okay. Well, let's talk about. We'll start with
I can't believe you just trashed it.
Well, and that's what I heard. I haven't watched it. I didn't get a chance to watch it. You gave me a list of movies to check out, man. There's just no way I can check all these out.
Did I not give you Blackenstein?
You did. It was on my list to try to check out if I could, all but right. You know, you I went on vacation and had to do family stuff. You know what I mean?
Your fault. Well, I mean, blaxploitation horror was really, really big in the 70s. I mean,
yeah.
Blackenstein came out, Ganja and Hess, which was released overseas, UK company. I think it was Odeon. Odeon released it on Blu-ray. And then Abby, which was a spinoff of The Exorcist, was out. And that's actually legitimately like good. And then, you know, Sugar Hill followed, which is – I know you did watch that
one. Mm-hmm. It was good.
Sugar Hill is good. And then we had another, you know, JD's Revenge. Which I know you watch.
Yep.
That's really, actually, that's another really legitimately like good movie.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde, which obviously that's a spinoff of Jekyll and Hyde, which isn't that bad. It's just mostly because they were inverting so much comedy into them just because they were kind of doing spinoffs. And, you know, Ganja and Hess is, you know, like a legitimately, like I've said legitimately like four times now. So we just had, you know, quite a few like decent horror films, blaxploitation horror films, and then it just kind of fell off.
Yeah.
Like it just, they just stopped. And that's kind of weird, because I mean, obviously they kept making blaxploitation horror films, but they just stopped out of nowhere. And that was kind of disappointing, because, you know, I actually enjoyed a lot of those. We had a direct-to-video one, Black Devil Doll from Hell, which was unavailable for a long, 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 long time. You could only find a rare VHS, but Massacre Video recently released it on DVD, so I definitely suggest picking that up.
There's a guy by the name of David Walker. He's from Seattle. He's from Portland. I think he did the voice for the he knew the filmmakers. He did the voice the voiceover for the trailer.
Oh. Well, then just a few years ago, Black Devil Doll came out, which was obviously...
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of is Black Devil Doll. I'm thinking of Black Devil Doll.
Yeah, because it was... Like, it's very... You know, it's funny, because that trailer is fucking classic. Like, I mean, the movie's actually pretty good, too. I know that the Giallo's Flame actually did this soundtrack to that, which was... phenomenal. It was so good. I mean, they're kind of a throwback. They take scores already, like pre-existing scores to movies, and they just kind of do their own thing. They don't sample, but they make it kind of how Claudio Simonetti did his like Halloween and Psycho stuff whenever he was covering things. Like he would do his own spin. Well, that's kind of what they do, and they did a killer soundtrack for that movie. So that's my two cents.
Cool.
But I mean, we do have some modern blaxploitation horror, which is Tales from the Hood, which is an anthology. It's fucking hilarious. Bones, which I've talked about constantly. I'm a big fan of Bones, even though how corny it is.
Leprechaun and the Hood, 1 and 2.
I don't know.
No?
Am I wrong? Just because, like I've said countless times, just because black people are in a movie doesn't mean it's blaxploitation.
But it says in the hood.
It says in the hood, which is automatically makes it not blaxploitation. Just of all these urban comedies when they're in the
Right.
No, they're not. That takes away from blaxploitation. We don't need that, you know, fucking bullshit.
I can agree with that.
And then I think Snoop Dogg did a Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horror.
Hood,
I
never ever, see? Hood.
It, but it's not Hood of the Horror, whatever fuck, whatever you're talking about. But, yeah, I never watched that, but I know that was like another one that was very very popular among, you know, blaxploitation fans.
So what I want to kind of do is let's snag a handful of the really good ones, of ones that we can recommend to people.
Like blaxploitation in general?
The blaxploitation horror.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So,
go ahead, Sean. Why don't you shout one out?
Well, we'll dig into a little bit with Blackula. I mean, really there's not a lot to say about it. It's basically, you know, Dracula, you know, it's basically the story of Dracula. You know,
but it's an African prince.
Right, but it's an African prince.
You oh my said God. That like with kind of, you know.
I burped. Hold on. Whew. Dude, I just ate like so much Italian food. It's not even funny. Let me make a note.
Okay.
But, But Blackula, that starred, is it William Marshall? William H. Marshall.
Prince Mabalwadala. I can never say it correctly.
And it's basically, he's, for some reason, having dinner, him and his wife are having dinner with Dracula, and Dracula decides to turn him into Blackula. I really dug the movie for what it was. I think that they try to take the material as seriously as they can, whereas they could have made it campy. They were legitimately trying to make like a straight up, you know, Dracula movie. Just with the, at the time, that ethnic spin,
ethnic. You know,
that's the wrong thing to say. See, I fuck up all the time.
You know what I'm saying? The colored spin.
No.
They put a bunch of damn colored people in the fucking horror film. I was sitting here, dog, need a white Dracula. I got black Dracula. I know what's going on.
Anyway.
That's me.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking racist. They made this movie a little bit urban. They
made it a little urban. That's what I meant to say, urban. That's what I
this horror
say.
Film has an urban spin.
Anyway.
This is exactly why it's goofy white guys. Because you should say shit like ethnic.
Yeah. All right. Well,
go ahead. Try to finish.
I don't even care. I'm not even going to edit this out. I don't even care anymore. So,
no, I understand what you're saying.
Like, everyone knows what I'm saying, okay? Jesus
they
Christ.
They legitimately try to make a straightforward horror film, but they just, it's just so comical though.
it is like,
and it's not because it's black people, it's just because how they actually present it and go about it. It's, you know, you can almost feel them trying to like put their heart and soul into it, and it just comes out kind of funny. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, because it's not a failure by any means. It's just like you can see it. You can see, yeah. You see it unfolding in your eyes, and you can just you can't help but laugh.
Well, I mean, for one thing, whenever he becomes, you know, Blackula, right? Whenever he turns into the vampire, all of a sudden he has this really weird facial hair, you know, out of nowhere just appear.
Very very spotty on his cheeks.
Yeah, it's very weird.
He's got spotty cheek hair.
He does. And I don't know who made that decision, but they had to, like, it was must have been a budgetary thing. All right, we got to make it look like he's all of a sudden transformed into a vampire, so let's just put hair on his face. I don't know, but that's really odd. But but what I liked like about this movie is, and I think any movie in the 70s in general has to, it's we're watching these now, and some of the style choices, you know, the turtlenecks, the mustaches, the afros, you know, it's just, it's so over the top. And the clubs that they go to with that, you know, that jazzy kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's blaxploitation in general. Like, you know, I mean, our episodes are fucking big cars, big guns, big afros,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but I mean,
that's traditional. I mean, just the outfits and the costumes that these movies put together are just, that's worth it just to watch that.
Yeah.
And fucking Fred Williamson's big, like, he, I don't know where the fuck he gets his cigars. His cigars are fucking 12 inches long. And he's always chomping on them, yeah, too.
Yeah. So, anyway, so Blackula, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about, you know, at the beginning when he makes his first appearance as Blackula, and there's the characters that are obviously gay, you know?
The Bobby and Billy?
Yeah, I was wondering, like, you know, was that, do you think that they represented, you know, gay characters well in this?
I'm just going to let you crash and burn yourself.
I was wondering what the stereotypes were like back then, because now when you see like a gay character, or if there was a while, like in the 90s especially, where it was like super over the top, you know what I mean? Flamboyant.
Yeah.
Whereas I kind of liked how they, you know, you can tell there's something going on there with those guys, but it wasn't like over the top and flamboyant, you know what I mean?
No, that's what I mean to say.
And I'm wondering,
like it's weird of that transition of every, like, you know, every decade, gay people are represented differently.
Because this was like a married couple. It was cool. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it was, they're represented, like in the 70s, it was completely different. In the 80s, it was more or less, like, it was a lot of drag and dressing up.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, you're right, it was just overly flamboyant, like birdcage, like,
yeah,
like shit. And now it's more or less like hiding it and then coming clean.
What I appreciated, I think that's what I mean to say is was at that time when this movie was made, they were letting everyone be represented, you know, as themselves. Like this was, like, there was no joke. There was no gay jokes. You know what I mean? It was, oh, this is a gay couple. Done.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I mean?
If they did that, then I probably wouldn't be considered a fucking blaxploitation movie.
Right. Right. And I'm wondering, you know, it's just,
the only thing they hated was Whitey.
Exactly. Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting observation on my part. You know,
everyone, the gays by now, hated just as much as Whitey.
Huh?
I said the gays were just hated as much as, you know, by Whitey as, you know, like black people. So, yeah. I mean, it would make sense.
It makes sense. I like that aspect of it. Anyway, you know, these types of subjects, man, I always end up wording things horribly wrong. Well, but, you know, dude, you know what?
Just let it flow. I mean, we know what we're talking about. I mean, obviously, how we've spoken, like, any listeners know, like, they know us by now. They obviously know we aren't racist or fucking homophobic. I mean, we fucking talk about our dicks constantly on this show.
Do we? You do.
I do. Oh,
man. I mean,
yeah. I mean, there's plenty. That's whatever. That's a whole different conversation. Yeah. But
so anyway,
we love the gays.
All right, we do. So moving along, like, so Blackula came out in 72, and then its sequel came out in 73, and
yeah, that shit was made back to back.
The sequel has more of a voodoo element, and then has Pam Grier, which is awesome that it has Pam Grier. Pam yep. Grier. But unfortunately, like, the movie just kind of lays there, man. You know?
No, it's very, very bland. It's very, very bland.
And it's kind of a shame, because I was all excited, you know, excited to see this, but it's pretty bland. So it makes sense that Scream would put this into, like, a double feature, you know?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think a UK company did this in a double feature, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, somewhere in the UK. It's funny that you mentioned voodoo, because I know that you haven't, like, dove into blaxploitation horror so much, but it's all about voodoo.
No, I know. I was gonna say,
it's every fucking movie.
Sugar Hill, man.
Voodoo.
Sugar
Hill. No, I mean, voodoo. Yeah, JD's Revenge, Abby, Alabama's Ghost. They all have some form of element of voodoo, and it's funny. I wish I had this list of stereotypes in blaxploitation horror, and it was really, really funny because it's super accurate. And I wish I still had it, but I was looking online a few weeks ago, and someone wrote up this list of, and it wasn't racist list. It was just basically laying it out, like, literally, of all the types of stereotypes in every single blaxploitation horror film, and they were hitting it on the nose, and it was really funny. Nice. But yeah, I mean, voodoo's just so common.
Yeah,
in these, and that's the only drawback for blaxploitation horror. I don't mind voodoo at all, but it's every horror film, it seems.
Yeah,
because I mean, there's even that voodoo element in Blackula. I feel like, even though it's not said, there's elements of it. Just feels like it. I don't know if that's, now, if you said this, you would probably feel racist. But whenever you deal with that type, whenever you deal with blaxploitation, and just even black film, black people in films today, they throw in so many goddamn voodoo elements.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about. Like, even like Jezebel that came out, like, as soon as a black person's mentioned, it has to be fucking voodoo. Like, what? Why? Why are we? It's like, that's a very stereotype. It's like, oh, we need, like, Hatchet. As soon as they fucking go to Louisiana, every black person fucking does voodoo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get really, really tired of the voodoo shit. So that maybe that's why I like, I like blaxploitation horror, but I'm not a big fan of it, because I'm really like, even still to this day, I'm fucking tired of voodoo.
Huh.
It's the one aspect of fucking Child's Play I don't like, is the voodoo shit. I hate the voodoo. Like, I hate when he goes to meet him.
Awesome.
And they fucking talk about voodoo and fucking voodoo dolls.
Well, let's transition into Sugar Hill and talk about it briefly in a second. But first, I wanted to mention, like, this double feature is coming out with Scream, Scream Factory. It's not that stacked with special features, but there is an audio commentary with David Walker, who I just mentioned, who did the voiceover for that Black Devil doll trailer. But it's the oh shit, where'd he go? It's an audio commentary with David Walker, and it's parentheses reflections on blaxploitation actors and directors speak. So, kind of cool seeing that David Walker is on that commentary. I want to check it out. He's been on podcasts and stuff before, and he's into comic books. He's an author, and his website is called thedavidwalkersite.com. He's awesome. He knows a shit ton of blaxploitation. In hindsight, we should have had him on the show. Damn it. But
you think of things on the show, that's the ultimate worst. That's the worst.
I know. Sorry. And then Scream Blackula Scream has a new interview with actor Richard Lawson. So that's all the special features on there. I rented these both on Vudu.com. Speaking of Vudu, VUDU.com.
Jesus Christ. And you make dad jokes during the show.
I rented them in HD, and they look pretty fantastic. So the Blues are probably going to look pretty good. I would imagine they're using the same transfer that I rented.
Unless they pulled from the camera negative, Sean.
This is not a collector's edition, so I doubt they did. So anyway, speaking of Vudu, let's move into... So 1974, we saw Sugar Hill get released.
Actually, you saw it in 2015.
I just saw it just the other day. But I mean, this is not to be confused with the 1994 film starring Wesley Snipes. Because they...
Snipes.
They have no similarities at all, just the name. But Sugar Hill stars Marky Bay.
She didn't really want to do anything. You're saying that like she was a big star.
She was not, but she's super cute. And
yeah, she's
super cute. Awesome in this.
Yeah.
Which surprises me that she didn't do more, because I think she's really good. And what I like
that's
about it.
Pretty much all blaxploitation actresses other than Pam Grier. They all died off, and it's so weird, too.
But she's like super cute in this. And Sugar Hill basically... her boyfriend or husband who has this bar gets murdered, and she basically, through voodoo, raises up zombies to have her revenge. I think this is the only black zombie movie, am I right? Like, full-on...
Well, there's black demons.
Okay.
Are you saying blaxploitation?
Blaxploitation is what I mean.
Oh, no. I mean, other than kind of like JD's Revenge in a way. But I mean, like full on like zombies coming in. No, this is right. Definitely, this is, as far as I know, the blaxploitation films I've seen, this is it.
What I like about the idea, I liked the voodoo angle on these zombies, because, you know, there's a difference between like zombies came from... whoever did the first zombie movie, I don't know. You can see like the transition. White zombie. Was that with the voodoo?
I've never seen White Zombie. Yeah, I know that's a kind of criminal, but well, I've seen clips of White Zombie.
Yeah.
But that's where zombies very first came from was voodoo rituals, and then it wasn't until later until they rose from the dead and they started eating people.
Yeah.
But no, it's always been voodoo. I mean, even in, you know, Fulci's Zombie, it's about voodoo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I kind of like this return. Because we've seen so many variations of zombies throughout the years, you know, and it's almost hit like critical mass. Like, it's just too much.
This
zombies.
Is early on too. This is just a few years after Night of the Living Dead.
Exactly. So, I mean, I really liked the voodoo fact that they're summoned to perform to seek out revenge, to be used as a tool to basically for revenge. What's going on with their eyeballs, though? They're like chrome. That's the only thing that I don't like about it.
What are eyeballs?
The zombies' eyeballs are freaking big old chrome balls.
I thought you meant Sugar Hill's eyeballs.
No, Sugar Hill's eyes are fantastic.
Yeah, I was like, no, I mean, I think that's just part of the possession issue. I mean, I don't know. That's your only pick is the eyeballs?
If I'm gonna pick apart the zombies, I'll pick the. Otherwise, they look awesome. Like they're basically like bodies, you know, of slaves that were brought to the U.S. from Guinea or something like that. And I like that aspect a lot, you know. What did you think of the guy that plays Baron Samedi? You know, he's this voodoo guy that you see all the time. Was it Don Pedro Coley?
Yeah, he was in THX 1138.
But I dig. I mean, I like that character. Like, you see that character kind of pop up in things. It's a kind of a, you know,
yeah,
reoccurring kind of voodoo character. But he's,
no, I mean, I just like the whole plot of it. You know, she a bunch of white guys. They summon a bunch of fucking zombies, and they're zombie hitmen. I think that's even on the poster. Like, meet Sugar Hill and her zombie hitmen. Boner. I mean, seriously. I mean, that already just. It just gets you. I do like the different zombie spin. Like this kind of voodoo stuff, I can tolerate because it's a big part of the film.
Yeah.
Like I should have meant like whenever they blame voodoo on shit or try to find the reasoning, it's like, oh, it's because of voodoo.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I mean, this is obviously like, this is the part of the revenge issue is that they raise a bunch of, slaves in order to be hitmen. I think that's fucking brilliant.
It's kind of sad, though, if you think about it, that these slaves are still slaves even if they're dead.
I guess so.
You know, what did you think about whenever Sugar Hill is summoning or in charge of the zombies, she's wearing that white jumpsuit and with an afro, and then... And
her outfits alone in this movie are fucking crazy.
Well, yeah. Yeah, a lot of polyester. But normally her hair is like all relaxed, you know what I mean? And then, but when she's summoning the zombies and seeking revenge, she has the afro going on.
She's got that killer afro. She's got like, in that, like, when she's actually wearing that, she looks like it's John Travolta's outfit from like Staying Alive or something.
Yeah. Exactly. He would totally wear that.
Yeah. But no, I totally dig that outfit. I mean, she's just like that when she actually puts on the white outfit, that's when the movie kind of changes for me.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it becomes more or less like, I don't know, like a Pam Grier type hero.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, I think pretty much all the white characters in this film are just despicable. Like, the main mafia guy is so mean to his blonde girlfriend or whatever.
Didn't he go by the name of Fabulous?
That was the one black character that's with all the white mafia guys. That's Fabulous, and that guy's suits, Charles F. Robinson. Though his suits, man.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right, that's right. Who?
I think, is it Valentine, Richard Lawson?
I can't remember.
I can't remember exactly who's who.
I can't remember the names.
But, dude, I remember Fabulous, because when you first see him, he's wearing this polyester suit that is just loud. And it's funny because he's wearing this suit, but then he goes outside, and then they sneak up on Sugar Hill's man, right, and to beat the shit out of him. And they're wearing, like, stockings over their faces. Like, man, you see that guy from a mile away, you know it's him. You know, a stocking over his head isn't going to disguise him because of his suits.
You like suit?
Dude, his suits were clothing. His suits were awesome. Like, that's, you know.
Richard Lawson was in Poltergeist. I will watch that. I'm just saying, he's in Poltergeist.
Okay.
He plays one of the tech guys.
You just watched it. I haven't seen Poltergeist in years.
Yeah, he plays. He's also one of the police officers in Streets of Fire.
Okay.
But that's not who I'm talking about. Of the guy's name. I'm talking about the white guy.
Well, which white guy?
Oh god, damn. Dude, he's super he plays in a lot of horror films. He played. I think he fucking plays Count Yorga or something. The fucking vampire movies.
Jeez. Oh man! Not now.
This is gonna drive me crazy now. I've had a total mind fart, but that's who you're talking about. It's the badass white guy, or the dipshit white guy.
Yeah, who's he's the main mafia boss, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I can't remember his name in the movie. It doesn't matter.
It's not Richard Lawson. Richard Lawson's
Richard Lawson's a black guy. No, that's when you said Richard Lawson. I was like, ah.
Robert Quarry.
That might be it. I honestly I can't remember the name of the actor right now. I just know he was in the
That's him. Yep.
Count Yorga films.
Yes, okay. Robert Quarry plays the mob boss, and he's just an asshole.
Yeah,
the whole movie. Yeah. Like, there's nothing good about pretty
it's
much
like a dipshit.
Yeah,
I hate him. That's why I probably didn't remember him. Sugar Hill's coming out on Blu-ray, by the way.
Yes.
That.
Who's putting it out?
Kino.
Kino, man. Kino is off the hook this year.
Off the hook or the hook?
The hook.
I think they're off the hook.
The only thing about Kino is I'm not expecting a whole lot of special features from them, but they're putting out some good movies. So we know there'll be good transfers for sure.
You're a good transfer.
Mm-hmm. One scene in this movie, I think my favorite scene, the one that actually creeped me out, was with Fabulous in the massage parlor. Do you remember that scene?
You're all about massage parlors.
You're just saying I'm all about whatever I talk about.
Because you're breaking apart the movie. I don't want to talk about those types of things. Those are special moments.
I know. I'm just saying, look out for these moments. It's great. That's the one scene that actually gave me legitimate creepazoids.
Creepazoids is a good movie.
All right. I can tell you want to move on from Sugar Hill. So, Jesus Christ. And finally, I want to talk about my favorite one of all these that I think is actually like a legitimate kind of dark horror story.
JD's Revenge.
JD's Revenge, man. JD's Revenge is about a mobster guy. You know, his ghost comes back, and this ghost of JD Walker comes back to haunt our main character. Who is the main character in
Isaac?
Yeah, Isaac. Yeah. Glenn Turman.
I don't know his real name. But yeah, Isaac is the lead. And then, of course, we have Louis Gossett Jr. who plays the Reverend.
Yeah, man.
Boom.
Like, this movie, I think, out of all the ones, there is a little element of camp. Everyone's trying to, put in a good movie. But I think JD's Revenge, like, there's, like, some legitimate... It's like a legitimate horror film. Like,
no, it's very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Very, 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 very straightforward.
And Glenn Turman is extremely likable as the main character who's getting haunted. I mean, he's a good looking guy. He's kind of, he's very, very laid back, and he has like a really great smile. You know what I mean? You can there's something about the actor you really connect with. And so when things start kind of going down and he starts getting more and more, possessed and is acting out of character, I think those moments hit harder, especially with him and his girlfriend. But I really liked him a lot. He's been in a whole bunch of movies.
You get a little crush on him, don't you?
He was a good actor, man. He was really stinking good.
I know, but you just you're all about this guy right now.
He had an awesome, awesome six pack going on.
I mean, he was, he was in recently, he was in Super 8. I remember he was the dude in the car.
Yeah.
He was also in, but I know who you're talking about, mm-hmm. because he has that look. His smile is very, very, very memorable. I mean, one of my favorite roles that he ever played, and actually it's an inspiration when I write for teachers, is that he's the teacher in Gremlins that investigates.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that scene's awesome in Gremlins.
Yeah, he plays Mr. Hansen or whatever. I don't know. It's just the way he carries himself and speaks. But no, you're right. He's just a very memorable guy, and he's very, very charismatic. And you just automatically, you just immediately like him.
Yeah.
So, but no, I know exactly what you mean. No, he's perfect for that role, and he's the one reason why the movie is so good. I think even white people have something to relate to with the story of Isaac or Ike, whatever you know they call him.
He goes by Ike, yeah.
But I don't know. It's a wrongdoing, getting revenge, you know. I don't know. It's just that I think it's a little bit more people can relate to than that. And like you're right, it's just a very serious and it's got, you know, kind of very violent undertones too. Mm-hmm. I know they don't really go out on a limb with it, but I don't know. There's just a few things about it that really hit hard.
Yeah.
You don't find yourself laughing or anything like that. You just find yourself watching intently into the whole film.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's really good. It's one that I would definitely recommend to anyone who's wanted to seek out any. I don't know. This is the one that doesn't feel like it follows all the blaxploitation tropes. You know what I mean? It's just for me. There are some in there, but I feel like it's just a legitimately like you can watch it kind of away from, you know, thinking of it as a blaxploitation. I think. Because I wasn't thinking about it at all when I was watching it. I was just kind of caught up in the story of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you put it that way, yeah, I could totally I get your point. So good point, Sean. Glenn Turman aficionado.
What do you think of young Lou Gossett here as the preacher?
I don't know. He's all right. I've never been a big Louis Gossett Jr. fan. He always plays the same role to me. He's always like he's got that man face. doesn't break, you know? I don't know. He plays the same character in every movie.
Yeah.
And I mean he probably has played something different, but everything I've seen him in he's been acting since it felt like he was like 12. But yeah, he always plays that hard ass. So I don't know. I don't have anything else to say.
Okay. All right.
He's like a black John Cusack. He doesn't do anything. Doesn't do anything but act like John Cusack. You know, John Cusack plays John Cusack in movie. Whether it's drama, comedy, whatever, he doesn't do anything else. Action movie, he fucking plays the bumbling guy. My guy, Louis Scott Jr. always plays the hard ass. I don't know. I just compared
Jack Tom Cruise always plays Tom Cruise. Jack Nicholson always plays Jack Nicholson. I get it.
You stole my thunder a little bit. Moving along.
So those are the movies that I watched and in preparation for the show. And I think Blackula, Sugar Hill, and JD's Revenge I had a lot of fun with those.
No, those would be my top recommendations too. Other than Bones, which I've talked about a few times, I don't think Bones would be well received by a lot of people. There's a certain mindset you have to go into that movie to kind of because you watch all these blaxploitation movies and you watch Bones, you can be kind of let down. You got to go into thinking that it was made in 2001, 2000 here with horror films alone was not that great of a year. People say the 90s weren't great. Kind of the 2000s, the early 2000s were kind of bummy.
Mm-hmm.
It has very, very similar 2000 tropes that it goes through. But yeah, Bones I'm a big fan of. You know, one thing that, you know, like I've said, is a good movie is Ganja and Hess. That's definitely one to check out. That's very, very straightforward. Very, very much like JD's Revenge, where there's no comical blaxploitation aspect. You know, just like how black people were trying to make action movies and shit like that that were very serious. You know, there were a couple films like that too. Abby, which is not not that great. It was lost for a long time. It just recently came up on DVD, but it was actually pulled from theaters because Warner Brothers sued them for basically ripping off The Exorcist. Hmm. So yeah, it was, I believe that they pulled it and it wasn't seen for a very, very long time to my knowing. I always saw bootlegs of it and I think I still actually have a bootleg of it. It's not great, but it's definitely, it's a sex, it's a, what do you call it? The sexy spirits, like a succubus.
Yeah.
Kind of has it, yeah. It kind of has that succubus thing about a girl possessed by a succubus, but it's an African succubus.
Voodoo succubus.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna say voodoo, but anyways, yeah, it's super low budget. It's fucking filthy, not like filthy movie, but it's dirty because it's filmed on 16mm.
Yeah,
so it's really like fucking just looks like a gross film in general. But I don't know. I kind of like that about it because it shows kind of like how this thing went through being kind of underseen for a long time. Mm. And also it stars Austin Stoker, who played in Assault on Precinct 13. So that's actually how I came to know about it, is because when I very first saw Assault on Precinct 13 as a young kid, Austin Stoker was kind of the highlight of that. And it's almost like, you know, I talked about kind of the crossover, with like George Romero and John Carpenter doing, you know, fucking Assault on Precinct 13 in 1976, like putting the black guy as the hero, as the cop that bosses around the white guys. You know, that's something to say, too. Not saying Assault on Precinct 13 is a black exploitation film by any means, but it's definitely an exploitation film.
Well, you can see that these movies were having, you know, an effect on the culture around them.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
Which I don't think we have right now.
No, we don't. We don't. Like, I don't start to pick a fight or anything, but not with you. But I'm just saying, like, fucking tell me how many popular male lead black actors do we have?
Yeah.
You know, we can't name a lot.
Yeah.
We can't.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because I was watching a movie called Dear White People, which is actually really stinking good. It's more of a drama than a comedy that, like, the poster art and everything makes you want to kind of think it's a comedy, you know? But it's actually, like, a really good drama on race and in college and things like that. And there's like the more militant, like black students that are trying to kind of do a Black Panther thing. And they all go to this theater and they're like demanding that the theater play more things than just Tyler Perry movies. And I thought it was kind of funny.
He's the reason why cinema's still alive.
Is he?
No, but I'm just saying that I just find it a little interesting and very, very cool that, you know, some of these white notable directors were throwing, you know, black people into the leads, because that was kind of a big step, you know, because, I mean, we're still in a situation, 1976, you know, where maybe that's not as well received. I mean, we're definitely coming out of it. But I just think even George Romero's Night of the Living Dead throwing throwing, slapping a white woman and bossing all the rest of the white people around. That's a huge fucking thing. Like, I don't think we watch Night of the Living Dead and watch, oh, it's a zombie movie. But think about at the time it came out. Think about 1968, 1969 of that coming out and being a massive hit. You know, it wasn't no small-time, low-budget film that we, you know, became cult favorite later on. It did really well. It was a very notable – it was at the fucking local drive-in. And seeing that, I don't know. I think films like that really, really helped with civil rights and shit. I would love to see an article or someone actually really investigate that. But as I'm saying, like, blaxploitation, like – with film, black people movies, black writers, you know, actors, directors. Like, they were making a very, very small impact that led to a minor impact. I wouldn't say major, but they definitely helped with a lot of this shit. And I think that's why it's a very important subgenre.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's a reason why it's went away. We have, you know, films that emulate that thing and then use that shit, but it did its purpose. It served its purpose, and it was a great thing. So
cool. You know, I was looking up Ganja and Hess here, and did you know that Spike Lee is basically remaking it?
Oh, yeah, with the Sweet Blood of Jesus.
Duh, Sweet Blood of Jesus.
Duh, Sweet Blood of Jesus. You know, not to pick on you, Sean, but I said when we fucking do this episode and do want to fucking – I went this whole goddamn time without mentioning Spike Lee.
We were talking about Ganja and Hess, and I just looked here and I saw that friggin', you know, Spike Lee's trying to redo it or something, which is interesting.
Yeah, apparently it's a first-shot playwright of fucking Ganja and Hess, but I don't want to talk.
We don't have to. I just thought it was funny. IMDb has plot keywords suicide, male full frontal nudity, female nudity, allegory, and vampire. Does that all sound like it makes up Ganja and Hess?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Freaking IMDb.
The Hess becomes a vampire. In the film, yes, and it's a curse and Ganja.
So Ganja's not weed. That's a character. I'm fucking with you, man.
Well, Ganja is the girl, and you know it's funny that we brought up Night of Living Dead because Hess is actually Dwayne Jones, who plays Ben in Night of the Living Dead. By the way. Huh.
Cool. Well, I mean, the plot synopsis sounds interesting, so I definitely I want to check this one out for sure.
Do some bullshit with it, and it's just like, you know, I don't, whatever. It's a vampire movie. I give anything away, but it's a, you mentioned, you know, vampires, but yeah, it's a neat little vampire movie that's very. I wish Brian Sauer, because I know that I think he's a fan of it. Yeah, it's definitely something to be seen. It's very, very serious, and it has a lot to say. It really does. It's definitely one of those like JD's Revenge where it has a reason why it's made.
Yeah.
And the fact is that Spike Lee's remaking it. I haven't seen the Sweet Blood of Jesus, but I can guarantee you that it's not going to have that impact. I mean, fucking Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Well, we've mentioned this before, I think, that the 70s were ripe for kind of the social scenario, how things were. It was ripe for kind of social commentary through these films. So I think today we don't have quite the same thing. We saw a little bit of it in the 90s. With kind of like the gangster rap and stuff like that, those movies kind of reflecting that shift in culture. But yeah, I mean, we don't have that kind of electric, you know, scenario kind of going on yet these days. I mean, right now, I mean, but it's cool how art can reflect a certain time period, a certain decade, you know, and that's, I look at these blaxploitation movies and I see them more as a time capsule, you know, as they're fun. Sometimes they're fun, but I think exploring blaxploitation even further, like it, I've come to even appreciate them even more as kind of a product of their time and appreciate them for that. You know, we had a listener on our website ask us, you know, how can we left off, movies like, Black Dynamite, on our last episode, and I was kind of, you know, we had on our list to talk about, but that's more parody, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, Michael J. White did a really, really good spoof of blaxploitation films. I'm a big fan of Black Dynamite. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really fall into our serious conversation. It's the same thing as fucking Undercover Brother.
Right.
Pootie Tang, all those had very, very tons of blaxploitation shit. But they're kind of making fun of the genre. Right. I don't know if this conversation is about making fun of it or talking about those films. It's more or less the impact.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, the Pootie Tang's funny. Black Dynamite's hilarious. It's really good. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a fan of my brother. But, you know, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why. I mean, even, like, stuff I'm going to get you, sucker. Like, I didn't want to really talk about that too much. Even though that stars some, like, fucking Isaac Hayes, Bernie Casey, fucking Jim Brown. I mean, it's got a great cast. It's a great movie. It's just that I don't know. Those films were made after the impact.
Right.
And I didn't tear down that impact so much. I didn't want to. I don't like to make fun of blaxploitation because I think it's a very serious time.
Right.
I think it's wrong. The same reason why I didn't want to talk about fucking Dolemite. Dolemite was one of the very first parodies of making blaxploitation. They were making fun of it while it was around. I just don't care for that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, up till I started jumping into blaxploitation more and learning about it, I'd always thought of it as, you know, you see the parodies and you think that they're just kind of dumb fun.
That's the thing,
And that's the thing.
Are popular because of the parodies.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think there's a lot more under the surface of blaxploitation than what, you know, parody reveals, you know? And, the parody, you know, parodies are funny. They're funny. They have their place. But I think that for me, when I was unfamiliar with blaxploitation, it kind of kept me away from it because I thought, oh, that's just all, I've seen it all in these parodies. You know what I mean? I don't really need to jump into these any further. And while there is a lot to, you know, there's a lot to looking back, you know, at the styles and everything and the way some of the characters act and everything. Yeah, it can be humorous. But yeah, the impact of blaxploitation, I think, as a tool to kind of empower the black community, I think it's something that I don't know. I mean, I don't hear it talked about a lot. You kind of maybe hear about it more. And as these movies start getting, you know, high definition transfers and kind of getting back out there, you know, into the culture, I think we're going to have a lot more of these conversations.
Yeah, Kino has done, if you're interested, Kino has done Cotton Comes to Harlem on Blu-ray. They did 42nd Street on Blu-ray. They're doing, of course, Sugar Hill. And they just recently announced Truck Turner, which is like best fucking blaxploitation movies there is. So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton that need to be out again. I know that. Yeah. Of course, Arrow's re-releasing Foxy Brown and Coffee, and they're a little bit more well-known. And then, you know, Vinegar Syndrome's doing an unknown one I haven't even seen called The Mothers. So I think that comes out, like, next month. I think that's the same. I think it's the same movie.
Uh-huh. I think so.
We'll see. But there's, you know, there's a ton out there. You just need to really kind of – some of these things you have to find. MGM put a lot of them out on the Soul Cinema double packs. But yeah, there's a lot of great films out there.
You know, I wanted to mention Kino also. They're doing a Kickstarter for it's a set they're going to be releasing called Pioneers of African American Cinema. And this is films between the 1920s and 1940s. So it's kind of a precursor into blaxploitation. If you're a film history buff, I think that's something to look into. I'm not sure when it ends. It ends on Saturday, March 21st. So you have until then to back the project. They've already reached their goal. In order to get the set, it's $100 to get the set, but there's other perks. Me, I would definitely do it to get the set, you know. I haven't pulled the trigger on it just yet. But that's something that they're doing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. But as far as blaxploitation film, I said 42nd Street earlier when you were talking. I realized it's across 110th Street for some reason. I don't know why I said 40. I think I was talking about 42nd Street because of porno.
Anyways, which is always kind of half, you know, you always have that on your mind a little bit.
Yeah, it's across 110th Street. But I would definitely, you know, we talked about Sweetback. That's definitely one to check out. Shaft, of course, that's really well known. Superfly, Slaughter is really, really good. I'm just kind of shouting off some stuff.
Yeah, because there's movies we haven't really talked about.
Need to check out Trouble Man. I really, really dig. I'm actually looking at these. I'm actually using something, Sean.
What?
Well, because I wanted to go by years because I didn't want to miss anything.
Yeah.
It's on my own list. Black Caesar, which was kind of the big one for Fred Williamson, where he really impacted, where, I mean, I think Tarantino even said that Fred Williamson's like the Black Burt Reynolds. Hmm. And that Black Caesar really shows that. Of course, the Cleopatra Jones and the sequel, Cleopatra Jones and the Casino of Gold, those are two great films. Of course, we have anything with Pam Grier, I would definitely check out. Detroit 9000 is definitely a great film. We talked about Iceberg Slim. His second or third book was made into a movie called Trick Baby. Black Belt Jones, if anybody knows anything about Jim Kelly, great martial artist. Mm-hmm. Had some really, really badass films. You know, he played in Enter the Dragon as well with yep. Bruce. He's a great martial artist, and sadly we lost him a few years ago. The Black Six, which is a fucking badass motorcycle gang. Black Eye, which is another Fred Williamson, kind of like a detective, kind of like a Shaft type thing going on. I think that's available on DVD through MGM. Let's see, TNT Jackson is definitely one. As I mentioned before, Kino's releasing Truck Turner, by far one of the best blaxploitation movies. If there's one that you should check out before anything else to actually get you started, is fucking Truck Turner.
Cool.
It's fucking a great action movie. Of course, The Black Gestapo, which is a really, really weird one, but it's good. And we talked about Graydon Clark. He did a spinoff of Warren Beatty's Shampoo. He made Black Shampoo, which is definitely something to see. It's very, very comical. The kind of Bosnegger trilogy with Fred Williamson, you know, he's Legendnegger, Charlie, Bosnegger, all those are really, really good Westerns. I highly, highly suggest checking those out. And that's pretty much it, other than stuff from, like I said, blaxploitation still went strong kind of in the 80s with like The Last Dragon and Original Gangsters and all Fred Williamson's like Black Cobra movies. Mm-hmm. Fred Williamson really kept blaxploitation alive during a time where they weren't being very popular at the time, I guess you'd say, or kind of big.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of smaller, like, independent blaxploitation films were out. I mean, like I said, it kind of really died off in the late 70s. But in the 80s, you know, we had, One Down, Two to Go, which is one of my favorites other than Truck Turner. It's got Jim Brown, Jim Kelly, Fred Williamson, and Richard Roundtree.
I think that's on Netflix, too.
Four of your biggest fucking blaxploitation actors in one movie that just play unrelenting badasses that are going to find out who killed their brother. Hmm. So definitely something to – definitely you have a long list of stuff to check out. Like it's very, very – like it's just a cool genre in general all around, and you're in for a good time. Oh, and also Brotherhood of Death, which is on Code Red's they released a Blu-ray, which is – fucking amazing. Like it's that one's really good too. Fucking a bunch of black vets that dress up as Klansmen to fucking kill them. Like that's like your typical, it sounds like your typical black slave. Yeah.
Is that one even easy to get, or is it,
well,
the Code Red store? Right. Does Diabolik have it?
You always say Diabolik.
I don't know.
Diabolik has kind of stopped carrying Code Red titles.
Damn it.
I think there's been some dispute over. I haven't got the full story, but Diabolik seems like they are ceasing to carry Scorpion titles and Code Red titles. I'm guessing because they're dealing with the Olsen twins. So I think there's a lot of mainly because Bill likes to shut down his store because he feels like everybody's selling third party. Well, if you wouldn't fucking stop shutting down your store, you wouldn't have people sell it third party.
Yeah, but he can't keep up with the orders. God. Remember, he complained when he got a whole bunch of orders at once. And he said, basically, within the next 2 months, you'll be getting your shit.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those things, like, it's funny just to follow kind of what he says and does. Ugh. Because any sense, because he's like, my stuff doesn't sell. I sit on it in my vault. I have 3 vaults. I can't sell anything. And then he sells shit, and he's like, I can't do this. It's too much.
Yeah. I can't get rid of the stuff. It's, I don't have time, or it's going to take me too long. By the way, speaking of Bill Olson, next week, New Year's Evil comes out on Blu-ray, and he apparently moderates the commentary with the filmmakers.
Dude, I can't wait to listen.
I hear it's just off the wall.
He's like, off the rocker, dude.
I hear he just asks questions that just have nothing to do with the film. It just starts out there, and the filmmakers basically kind of humor him.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a recent recording, because that's got to be new, because New Year's Evil, as far as I know, had the VHS release, and then MGM did a DVD of it, but I have the DVD, and I don't remember any commentaries.
Yeah,
So that's going to be something to fucking see, man.
I can't wait.
Apparently,
people are saying that's, even if you don't like the film, that's the reason to get the Blu-ray.
In the movie?
Huh?
Have you seen,
New Year's Evil? Yeah. It was, streaming on Netflix, or it was anyway.
Oh, yeah. I like it, man. It's really, but as of right now, February was today, the 17th.
Yes.
At 11:39 EST, Code Red Big Cartel is up.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah, it's been up for the past, like, week. He took it down for a few days to fulfill orders. Back up now. Like, I know we talk a lot of shit about Code Red and Bill is because it's fucking hilarious, but legitimately, the guy's got a great catalog.
Yeah.
And he's really, really good movies.
Yeah.
You're going to, like, you know, people, even you, Sean, you're like, I don't know if I want to buy DVDs. Well, some of the shit you may never get again.
I know. I've been looking in them.
Only certain people that have the money and have the time in order to do things like this. Yes, a lot of these will probably be picked up by Vinegar Syndrome, because they've already picked up like 3 since they stole them. But I mean, there's. Like, a lot of shit on there that's just, like, ridiculously good and extremely hard to find and fucking Blu-rays of it.
Yeah, I want to get that Butcher one, whatever.
The Bloodthirsty Butcher movie?
No. With the frickin'...
Huh? Baker Nightmare Maker?
Yes. Yeah.
Warning? Yeah. That's definitely something to see. Night Warning's a really... Like, it's really out there. There's this huge, like, undertone to the movie, too. It's just really, really bizarre. It's a good movie. It's just really, really weird. That's actually if you actually listen to us and you go to Code Red, he'll have things that say sold out. They're not sold out. So when you go to it, don't think that it's actually gone forever. It's just that Bill claims he has like 3 or 4 vaults and he only can get to certain ones for certain months or some bullshit. So he'll put them listed as sold out, even though they're not.
Right. Cause he can't get to them or whatever.
Out of mind. Cause right now Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker sold out, but it obviously isn't because that's not a limited edition. So just, you know, be smart with what you get. Don't, you know, get something you don't want to because your other one's sold out. Just wait.
Right. Because
eventually become available. But I do suggest picking up some of these movies because I don't think he's got too much longer going on for this. Because I think he's just going to get burnt out and just stop one day.
You mean he's not burnt out yet?
Well, he is, but I have a feeling like these movies are going to go away.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
On a stockpile of this shit.
Yeah. I keep saying, just give me Chakma. Someone just give me Chakma on Blu-ray. Apparently that was announced like 3 years ago for Code yeah. Red. That ain't coming out.
But I just want to read this for you. I was sold out. Rituals with Hal Holbrook, which I've wanted for a long time. I believe that is sold out. But if you want just a good time on your lunch break, go to CodeRedBigCartel.com and look at the definitions of the movies. This is the definition of the beginning of the movie. I briefly removed this listing due to error on shipping amount and people panic. I read the names. Let's see if they're going to buy it or just complaint it was never out. Geez, for the love of God, buy it if you want it. Quit blaming on me or Obama just because you buy it.
Like, blame me or Obama.
Every single one you click on says shit like that.
Oh my God.
Actually go to, I know we're like totally going off the wall.
Hey, who cares?
But if you go to shit.
He updated Nightmare. He took that off. He put something crazy on Nightmare, but right now it says due to high volume of hoarders that is selling this is Fleabay, one per customers.
But what is the, remember that night I told you, like, he fucking started arguing with me, like, this book, and I'm like, where is this coming from? But he actually commented and put my name on one.
Oh, yeah. I forget which movie that was.
I don't remember which movie, because it doesn't really matter. I just laughed, but like, he does that shit. Like, he'll post, like, so-and-so says this, they're an asshole. But anyways, if you want a fun time, just go read.
Oh my god. He has the picture of,
he has a picture of Eli Roth, the Scream Factory movie.
Yes. It just says $100. Due to high volume of sales, some order might take 3 weeks to be shipped. Some of the inventory is at one of the three vaults. Fourth vault item is crammed into the other three vaults, so it might take many hours to find some titles.
This is why if you do order from him, you might have to wait a few weeks. Anyways, enough about Code Red.
Oh my gosh, we can go on for hours and hours. I can't believe he has no organization with one. That blows my mind.
15 years. Wow. Even longer than that.
Incredible.
But anyway, right. Blaxploitation and Code Red.
We hope you guys have dug these, you know, kind of us going off the reservation a little bit with talking about Blaxploitation. Huh?
Be hearing about this one.
You will? We will?
Well, this one's off the rails. Yeah, Bill Olson's going to listen to this fucking... Are you calling me the Olsen twins again?
He's going to shut down the store. Sorry, everybody. He's going to shut down the store because he heard us talking.
I was talking shit.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. You know, these past few weeks, we've gotten... For all the shit I throw myself, basically, we've gotten some good feedback. So thank you for the kind words, those of you who have given us good feedback. We're going to be kind of back to the regular scheduled program coming up, talking about some horror titles and things like that. I know that we want to hit Starry Eyes for sure. We want to hit New Year's Evil for sure and Phantom of the Opera with Robert Englund. At some point. So we got some good stuff coming out as far as covering some cool releases. But also, like, Brad's been busting his ass to get some more guests on. And the guest list is looking pretty cool. So I'm really excited to kind of jump back into having guests on and things like that. So there's some good stuff coming down the line.
Yeah, I really hope you enjoyed our ethnic and colored episodes.
You son of a bitch.
Fucking races.
Oh my god. Okay. And with that, find us over at thescreamcast.com or over at oneofus.net. And we're on Twitter, scream_cast.
Nerdly. And, .uk.
Yeah, and nerdly.co.uk has been kind enough to link to our show. So thank you for all of you who've listened. Drop us a line, readme@thescreamcast.com if you want to send us an email. Also, trying to blow out these goddamn t-shirts. Right now I have them all. We only have smalls, mediums, and some larges left.
Follow us on Brad on Twitter.
What? Anyway, I have they're up on the site. I have them for $8 a pop. And then I think $4 shipping, so that's $12.
Promo code to get it for $7?
No promo code.
About code red. Promo code. Red is promo code, you get it for free.
No. No, sorry. No promo codes. Anyway, we are trying to get rid of these. And then we'll explore other merchandise options because I like the t-shirts, but I kind of feel like maybe they were a dud. But part of me is kind of a bit ticked off that our order, my full order, never got completed. But that's a whole other story. And you know, all of you who wanted extra large shirts, we were shorted and never got those. So that's enough. That's enough. My,
maybe you can have Bill Olson on the show and you guys can bitch about stuff.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Dude, he would totally come on the show and have no idea. I wouldn't want to make fun of the guy because I kind of feel bad for him, but it actually would probably be funny to have on the show because he'd probably start ranting.
My wheels are turning. Brad, let's make that happen.
I know, like, I'm actually really debating about it. I don't know if I can keep a straight face. Because I don't want, I honestly, like, I really don't want to make it to the point right. where we're in fun of him, because I don't want to do that, because I actually feel bad for the guy. I just think how he runs things is very, very funny, and how he reacts. But, I mean, obviously the guy does have some problems, so by no means I want to make fun of him. So I probably won't.
It would be,
Because I couldn't stop laughing.
Basically, we would come across as total assholes, and the show would be over.
Fuck watching New Year's Evil. Just listen to that fucking commentary.
I can't wait. All right. Anyway, we keep rambling, but thanks again for listening to the show. Let us know what you thought about these episodes. If you checked out some of these movies and enjoyed them or hated them or whatever, we'd love to hear your thoughts. So drop us a line, either email, which who emails anymore, but it's readme@thescreamcast.com, or just hit us up on Twitter or comment on the freaking website. Okay? Guys, have a great week. What? What, Brad?
No, I was just saying, people complain about you a lot through my Twitter.
Do they? Fuck you guys. All right. All you guys, have a great week. We'll talk to you later.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. But it's just begun.
Welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 49. Hey,
gotcha.
Can you crank the volume on your microphone by chance?
How's it now?
Hey. That microphone in your mouth, sir.
It is.
All right, go.
Poop. You kept saying, you said poop like four times.
Shit.